By 2:30, she and Larry were done at the tall, white federal courthouse. Afterwards, they stood outside, planning the remainder of the afternoon with an assistant attorney general named Thane and an investigator from the Fulton County Solicitor's Office who'd been delegated to assist them. The four of them agreed that Larry and the investigator, Wilton Morley, would serve Collins while Muriel waited at the office of the Department of Law with her cell phone. If Collins was suddenly moved to give an interview without his lawyer, Muriel wanted to be on hand to document it properly. In the event she didn't hear from Larry, they'd meet at their gate at the airport for the flight home. Morley had an address for Collins in a suburb north of the city. In the car, he showed Larry records he had gathered. A credit report listed Collins as the owner of Collins Travel, his own agency. As Erno had insisted, Collins' rap sheets, both local and national, revealed no further arrests since his release from prison 5 years ago. Atlanta to Larry was like L.A. South, an appealing terrain. Here, hills and trees surrendered to highways and shopping malls. Collins lived and worked 30 minutes northeast of downtown, off Jimmy Carter Boulevard, in an old town now engrossed by sprawl. Morley circled by the agency once. It was on the end of a flat-roofed commercial strip with a stressed concrete facade, next door to a dry cleaner and a pet shop. On reflection, Larry had decided it was better to approach Collins alone. "I think I'll have a better chance to get something from this guy if it feels like old home week instead of a pinch." Morley parked on the other side of the busy avenue. While they were watching the agency, two people emerged. A man, big enough to be Collins, in a stylish shirt and tie, and an older woman whose hand he was shaking. After parting with her, the man walked down the block to a transmission shop adjacent to the strip mall. The overhead doors on the bays had been lifted. The man was conversing with someone at the front end of an old Acura that was elevated on the greased shaft of the hydraulic lift. Larry looked both ways, then jogged across the street. When the man stepped around the car again, Larry recognized Collins for certain. He walked up, smiling. Collins took Larry's eye briefly and then turned away and strolled back to his agency. When Larry saw Collins next, he was out the side door of the building, moving at full speed. For just a second, Larry watched him run. "This case," he thought. "Jesus Christ, this fucking case." Then he took off after Collins, who had disappeared up an intersecting residential street. Gaining on him, Larry was yelling the usual stupid stuff. "I just need to talk to you." Collins was headed straight uphill, and after another couple hundred feet, he gave up. Either he'd heard Larry, or more likely he was on the verge of collapse. There were 50 pounds more to him than a decade ago, and he stood heaving desperately with his hands on his knees. "What the fuck are you doing?" Larry asked several times. Over his shoulder, he saw Morley flying up the block, his gun drawn. Larry motioned with both hands to stop. Morley did, but kept watch from where he was. When Farwell could speak, he said, "Heck, man, I just don't want to talk to you. Bolton's the best way to get run in. I haven't done any kind of thing for you to run me in, man. I live a clean life. You check that out. I'm clean." Collins' face was a little rounder, and he'd started to bald, but he remained uncommonly good-looking with those striking eyes, the color of raw leather. "Listen," said Larry, "I came down here with a subpoena because your smart-ass lawyer wouldn't take it off of us, that's all. Man, you can give me all the subpoenas you want. I don't have to talk. That's what the attorney said. Fifth Amendment, man." The two of them began walking back down the hill. "Well, sooner or later, you're going to have to come up to the Tri-Cities and tell that to the judge, eye to eye. Unless you want to answer some questions now." Collins laughed. He'd heard similar gambits before. "I'll talk when the attorney says. That Fifth Amendment. Only way it works is for a man to just shut up. He says once you start going on, you can't just up and stop when you want." "Look, I'm not writing anything down. This is just us mice. I only have one real question anyway. Your uncle is saying you lied to me back in that jail 10 years ago when you put it on Rami. He's saying you tricked on me." Collins considered the pavement as they walked. "All you want to hear is my uncle, some kind of lying fool. And he's not. Most definitely not. They had reached the agency and entered the same side door, still wide open, through which Farwell had departed. It led to a small back room where ticket forms were stored. Out front there were two desks. Collins took a seat and motioned Larry to an armchair. "Is your place, Collins?"
"Yep."
"Very nice." Larry looked around appreciatively, as if he meant it.
"My uncle lent me the money to get started. Paid him off last year."
"Uncle Erno?"
"Only uncle I got. That man has been a blessing to me. Took me way too long to know it, but he has been the hand of Jesus Christ in my life. Truly, I would never talk against Erno."
"Yeah, well, if Erno's straight up, don't you think you owe something to Gandalf?" At the mention of Squirrel, Collins grew decidedly more somber.
"Only one thing I'll say to you about Gandalf, and I won't say no more. When I pray each night and ask Jesus forgiveness, first thing I mention is Gandalf. First thing. I ask God to forgive me every day for what we did to that poor hook."
Collins looked across the desk fearlessly, his light eyes held wide, and applied a mighty nod. Whatever these guys were up to, it was all too deep to Larry. He reached into his pocket and took out two copies of a subpoena. He filled out the return on one, describing where and on whom the subpoena had been served, and handed over the other copy. Collins studied it, while Larry surveyed several pictures on the desk. A big, sweet-looking blonde woman appeared in most of them, often with two tow-headed twin girls.
"Here, mine," said Collins, "if that's what you're wondering. The kids."
"Yep. Look white as you do."
"Time was, I didn't even want to know anyone white. But a man can't escape the truth. Truth is, every relative I claim as mine is white. And I'm a black man. You try and figure that out. Only thing that makes any sense is that Jesus had something special in mind. So, if it's time for me to talk, Starcheck, then Jesus will let me know. And once I swear my oath to him, you're gonna know every word is true. But right now, this is where Jesus wants me, and where I'm gonna stay. Fifth Amendment, man."
Collins walked Larry around to the door, shook his hand, and wished him well. He even added a little salute to Morley across the street.